This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Philip Kaufman, directed the new movie Henry and June. It's the first film to receive the rating NC-17, which stands for No Children Under 17 Admitted. NC-17 is the alternative to the X rating. The X had recently come under fire for effectively censoring serious movies with adult themes by equating those movies with pornography. Many theaters had a policy against showing X-rated films. Ironically, the first movie to have the new rating is in part about the writer Henry Miller, whose novel The Tropic of Cancer was censored for close to 3 decades in America until a 1964 Supreme Court decision. Henry and June is based on the diaries of Anaïs Nin. Her diaries were first published in 1966, and her independent thinking made this work inspirational in the feminist movement. But the movie is based on a part of her diaries that she suppressed until the deaths of the involved parties. It's the story of her brief romantic relationship with Henry Miller, who became her lifelong friend, and his wife June. The movie is set in Paris in 1931, the year Nin met Henry and June. I asked Philip Kaufman if he was pleased to have the distinction of making the first film to be rated NC-17.
Well, I'm very pleased that our film can be shown complete, and this was the only way, or probably the only way that could have been done. We were given an X rating, which meant that for a long period we weren't allowed to even have trailers or any advertising. We were about to appeal to try to get an R rating, but for that you have to get a two-thirds majority of the appeals board, and that can be a pretty sensitive thing, pretty difficult thing to do. So I'm glad that the film is out there, and I'm glad that by not cutting the film we were able to force a change in the system.
Well, this film has really set a precedent, and it's the first example we have of how theaters and newspaper advertising departments are treating films with this new rating. So what have you seen so far? Are most theaters who'd show this kind of film, by this kind of film I mean a more arty kind of film, you know, and it's not an action film. So right. Are most theaters who would show this kind of film showing it, and are newspaper advertising departments accepting ads for the movie?
Right. By and large, that's true. You know, the first week it was in, originally booked in 77 theaters around the country. That was cut down to 76 because in one town, Dedham, Massachusetts, some people, some selectmen decided that the theater should not be allowed to show the film, even though they hadn't seen the film at that point. And I think one place in the South, Birmingham, I think one of the newspapers doesn't want to run ads or even mention the film as being there, although I understand that in that area the theater chain is fighting that.
Were you concerned about getting an X when you were making the film, and did that enter into what you decided to show and how you decided to show it?
I was making an R-rated movie, I felt. My last film was The Unbearable Lightness of Being, and I really felt that I was working within the same guidelines as we had done that film with. I was sort of surprised. It just seemed that we knew we were pushing, you know, we're aiming for the line, so to speak, but we didn't feel that there was anything in this film that should push it into the X category. In fact, Unbearable Lightness of Being had some more, you know, nudity and so forth, things that were traditionally might have put it into the X category. But I was surprised. Tom Pollock, who is the head of Universal Studios, read the script and thought it would be an R-rated movie. And he saw the film and thought it was an R-rated film, as did I and as did the people who were working on it. Something happened along the way. I suppose their standards tightened, or new people came to the board, or perhaps because the film concerns a woman's search for her sexual identity as opposed to a man's, that put certain people on edge.
Let me make another suggestion. There are a couple of lesbian scenes in it. That might have had something to do with it.
Well, that's true. That might have, although Unbearable Lightness of Being certainly had a sort of extended scene between two women. You know, whether it's called lesbian or whatever, the mystery that is being explored between the two women is all about there. Certainly the scene in Unbearable Lightness of Being was, you know, had female frontal nudity and so forth, and in some ways, you know, went a little bit beyond some of the scenes in this film.
You said that you tried to keep to the same guidelines with Henry and June that you kept with, right, with The Unbearable Lightness of Being. What were the guidelines that you were keeping in mind?
Well, I just thought that, you know, since that film had been an R-rated film, that, you know, there were scenes of nudity, there were scenes of, you know, sexual exploration within the boundaries of a film that was a serious film, certainly a film with serious content, serious intent, really. And I felt that that would distinguish it from what I would have expected to be an X-rated film, and not only Unbearable Lightness of Being, but, you know, so many other films that had been given an R, even after they were cut, seemed to go a step beyond beyond this film. You know, in some ways, Wild at Heart or Wild Orchid, after it was cut, put into theaters. I just felt that, and again, so did the head of Universal, felt that they were making a bad mistake by doing this.
Did Universal ever ask you to re-edit your movie?
No, they never did.
The previous X controversies of the past few months had to do with independent films like Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, The Cook, The Thief, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Wild at Heart had briefly gotten an X, and then they re-edited it. And a lot of people just assumed, since now it was a major, it was Universal who had been given the X, that it was more likely that there was going to be movement with the MPAA. And in fact, it was after your film, you know, distributed by Universal, got the X, that the MPAA changed. Do you know what Universal did behind the scenes?
I don't know, you know, the full story on that, but I do know that, you know, there was a lot of pressure prior to all of this, of course, and all of those things, including the judge's statements in the Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down case, you know, had to be motivating, you know, the MPAA and Jack Valenti to take another look at all of this. What happened exactly, I don't know, and I was very pleased that it did happen, though, just prior to us going to the appeal. I just think, you know, everything added up to it was a time for change, and I thought it spoke very well for the MPA to try to address all of the problems, both of the creative rights of the filmmakers, the, quote, artistic integrity, and to try to redefine for parents a system of guidelines that would make them better informed. They copyrighted the NC-17 category as opposed to the X, which was not copyrighted. And the R category will now talk about whether it's sex or violence or language, which I think is an improvement, because I know a lot of parents who would like to know about those things who object particularly to violence.
Philip Kaufman is my guest, and he directed the new film Henry and June. Henry and June, I mean, this is a movie about Anais Nin, who, among other things, wrote erotica, and Henry Miller, who was most famous for Tropic of Cancer, which was banned in this country for around 30 years. So, I mean, these are two people who wrote about sex and wrote passionately and vividly about it, and wanted, I mean, Anais Nin wrote erotica so her readers would get aroused, you know. So what were your considerations in putting sexual scenes on the screen in terms of how explicit to get and how arousing you wanted it to be?
Well, we were trying to be faithful to the material, which was the unexpurgated journal of Anais, called Henry and June, that we discovered 4 years ago when it was published. It was quite a surprise to my wife and myself when we read the material. We had read we had met Henry Miller, we had met Anais Nin, we had read, I guess, virtually everything that they had written. But in the earlier journals of Anais Nin, we were given a much more objective viewer in her own journals. And then suddenly this sexual person was revealed. Again, this is not the Henry Miller of Tropic of Cancer. This is the Henry Miller as revealed in the journals of Anais Nin. And I think it's important to to keep that clear too, that we're making a film that, you know, sexuality is one of the subjects of the film, but it's also an exploration of a lot of other things, of mm-hmm. innocence, of maintaining innocence as we go through life, experiencing things, of a literary relationship. I mean, the other thing that was so amazing about the relationship of Henry and Anaïs was that it was a lifelong relationship that that did have this erotic beginning to it, this very highly sexually charged beginning, but lasted a lifetime. And literary relationships being what they are, this was an extraordinary relationship and friendship.
I'm curious whether you wanted the love scenes to be sexually arousing to your viewers. And I ask this in the context that for some people in the courts, that might seem like a bad thing. It might make it seem prurient. On the other hand, some viewers have complained that they didn't find it arousing enough and that they thought they should have been more aroused by the scenes. So I was wondering what you wanted your viewers to experience.
Well, you know, that response, some people, because they heard it got an X rating, you know, wanted to see something, you know, that went way beyond the intention.
Well, I'm even thinking of some film critics here, though.
Yes, but that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Exactly. Because I've read a couple of those reviews, and but the basic thing behind all of that, of course, is, you know, what different people find sexy is something you can't calculate. Some, you know, I find that the film is sexy, and it was meant to be that way. It's about sexuality. For, you know, some people require things that go, you know, much more further afield to be aroused. And I sometimes find even in a look or a gesture a lot of sexuality. So it really depends on the viewer, and it also depends to some extent on the set they go in to see the film with. Expecting, the ultimate sexual movie, that wasn't our original intention. We, as I say, we're trying to explore within the context of the journal of Anaïs Nin these relationships. And the film is also a lot of these viewers, because it's about sexuality and because it had gotten an X rating, view the film almost in total silence, as if they were going to church in a way, you know, breathing hard, waiting for, you know, to be blown away by these things. And the film is meant to have a lot of fun in it, and from the very beginning, a kind of pervading humor that if missed, the film then is viewed in a totally different way. And, that's an unfortunate viewing.
Henry and June is about the relationship between the writer Anaïs Nin, the writer Henry Miller, and his wife June, and it's based on Nin's diary from the year 1931, the year that she met Miller. Mm-hmm. So you and your wife, who co-wrote the screenplay, read this very carefully, and I'm sure you went back and reread a lot of Miller and Nin's stuff. I know that you probably talked about the relationship between Miller, Nin, and June for a long time. What were the things that you were most interested in, that you found either most baffling or most of interest to you?
Well, the first thing, or one of the first things that jumped out to us, was the character of June, who it became clear had not only inspired thousands of pages in Henry Miller's writings. I mean, most of his major work in terms of the novels touched was preoccupied with his obsession with his wife June, particularly Sexus Plexus Nexus, Tropic of Capricorn, and even in Tropic of Cancer. June is his not only his muse, but his fixation and the thing that obsesses him. Anaïs's novels too deal to a great extent with this character June and her relationship with June. So here was a kind of mysterious figure in literature to whom thousands of pages had been devoted, who was virtually unknown except through the journals of Anaïs. So that and Anaïs, on meeting June, thought she was the most beautiful woman she'd ever seen. So that was an interesting thing to us. That and then it was, of course, really the passion that had existed between Henry and Anais, and the way that Henry sort of, in a way, began to open Anais up from, if you read the earlier journals, there was, you know, a woman who was in a kind of a stable or almost stable relationship, married to a man she loved very much. With the meeting with Henry, her life begins to change considerably, and she goes through, you know, the most passionate, wildest period of her life, really.
What effect did Henry Miller's writing have on you when you first read him, and when and how did you first read him?
Well, I read him when I was in college.
When the book was still banned in the States.
It was banned, sure. Well, except there were things that you could read, you know, some things that had been allowed in that weren't censored. And certainly around that time I read Colossus of Marussi, which I think is a wonderful book that led us in great part to go live in Greece for a while, back in the very early 60s, the beginning of the 60s. But Miller, there was just something about his spirit of, you know, burning his bridges behind him, of living the creative life, of really, Miller was writing about self-liberation, and there was a contagious quality to that writing that really appealed to me, you know, that we within ourselves had to become our own saviors and not keep looking for saviors from without. And I think that was, you know, one of the dominant themes of his writing. And there was a great generosity on his part toward other writers, and that, you know, exemplified itself in the way he used to talk about Anais Nin, you know, way before we knew there was anything between them. He always liked her, you know, kind of promoted her writings. She was then very, you know, unknown, but particularly her journals, which he said when they're published, they're going to be some of the important journals of the century, he felt. And then I met Miller. Rose and I met Miller. My wife and I went to visit him in Big Sur in 1960, and spent a day and on into the night with him. And there was quite a different man from, you know, the Tropic of Cancer, the kind of angry Miller. He was an extremely gentle man by all accounts of all people who'd met him. There was this gentle man, and this was interesting in the way that Anais really talks about Henry, so that you get that man more in our film than you would get out of the writings of Henry Miller.
Mm-hmm. How did you first read Tropic of Cancer?
Well, it was like, you know, these were all smuggled copies. You know, it was, I'm sure it had been well-thumbed, pages stuck together, all of those kinds of things. And somebody passed it on to me. And then, you know, in later years, when I would go to Europe and hitchhike around Europe, you could buy his books there and smuggle them back in, you know, in the dirty, hidden way at the bottom of your bag and, you know, in the dirty laundry. I mean, everybody was looking for Henry Miller books at that time. When you came into the country, that was the thing they seemed to be most eager to intercept.
Film director Philip Kaufman is my guest. His new movie is Henry in June. Several of your movies have been based on books. Henry in June is based on Nin's diaries and The Unbearable Lightness of Being on the Kundera book. What was it like with The Unbearable Lightness of Being to have Kundera still alive and able to consult with you on the adaptation? And I was wondering if his presence gave you the liberty to do things that you might otherwise would have felt was cheating.
Well, he didn't come to the set. We really worked on this.
You didn't send him the screenplay or anything?
Oh yeah, sure. I co-wrote the screenplay with Jean-Claude Carrière, mm-hmm. a wonderful French screenwriter, novelist, and so forth. But I did spend, you know, weeks with Kundera. Kundera and I'd go to his apartment in Paris every morning, and we would go through all the details of the script. And he had been a professor of, you know, he taught film in Prague when he was living there, screenwriting, actually. And so, I mean, his first word to us was eliminate. In fact, after he saw the film, you know, he said, people will ask you why you don't have the whole book in there. He said, but you tell them that that he timed his book out, and it would have run 26 hours if it had been filmed as it was. But no, he knew and agreed, I think, with the idea of eliminating, in a way, the most interesting character in the book, which that is to say, Kundera, the narrator, you know, the one with whose mind jumps around and explores all the characters, in order to bring things out of the book and put them on the screen. We had to, you know, find a way of doing that, and in a way, we felt that the narrator was in some way substituted for by the mood of the Janacek music that we put in. Really, and it was really Kundera who sort of introduced me to Janacek. We'd sit in his apartment listening to Janacek, and really decided that the smaller Janacek pieces, quartets or piano, you know, the smaller things would be appropriate for this film.
I know you had some trouble on early projects that you worked on. You were writing of a movie version of Star Trek, and the studio didn't want to bring it out until Star Wars was a big hit. And then you worked on The Outlaw Josie Wales with Clint Eastwood, but ended up leaving or being fired from, I'm not sure which, the movie. What went wrong on that?
On
Josie Wales.
Well, Josie Wales, we just had a whatever the opposite of a meeting of the minds is. I guess it's called creative differences. I wrote the script and was directing it. You know, I had cast the film and chosen the locations. And you know, he was a director and I was a director, and we had creative differences. And I left the film. And Star Trek. It was strange because the studio, we were all set to really go into production on that. They didn't really quite know what they had, but this was, as you say, before Star Wars came out, and somebody at the studio said a line that I love, there's no future in science fiction. And 2 weeks later, Star Wars came out after they had canceled the project, and it was
right. So much for prophecy.
Yeah, so much for prophecy, and you know, I guess there is some future in science fiction, or there was some future.
Henry and June is really a family project for you. Your wife Rose is the co-writer of the screenplay, and your son Peter is the producer of the movie. Do you like keeping it like that, or does it ever get frustrating because there's maybe no safe haven, you know? And any problem with the movie is going to, like, bleed over into the family.
Yeah. Well, you know, at times it can be very intense. When Rose and I were writing some of the scenes of writers arguing, you know, we certainly had our arguments and, you know, violent arguments while we were writing those things. You know, we had, you know, strong differences of opinion, but we you know, finally worked everything out, and in retrospect, those seem to be, you know, interesting times that we went through. But I like to work intimately with the crew, particularly with the actors. I like the feeling of quote family, of being around people who, you know, are trying to make the same thing. And you know, it's one of the reasons I can't live in Los Angeles, and I really don't like to view the films at any point, really, as being part of, quote, the business of making films. I'm really interested in films just as I say, things that interest me and finding a way of you know, telling stories and having an interesting time doing it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your movies.
Well, thanks, Terry.
My guest has been Philip Kaufman, and his new movie is Henry and June. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.